Hello, and welcome to Season 7, Episode 5 of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. I'm Becca, and this is a podcast that features members of the Virtual Coffee community. Virtual Coffee is an intimate group of developers at all stages of their coding journey, and they're here on this podcast sharing their stories and what they've learned. And we're here to share it with you. Here with me today is my co-host, Dan.
What up, Beck? How's it going?
It is fantastic. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Yeah. I've had probably too much coffee this morning, but other than that, feeling pretty good.
Nice.
And so today we have another awesome interview with another awesome member of Virtual Coffee. We're talking to Rebecca Key, who is a software engineer based out of Atlanta, Georgia. Rebecca had a really cool story. She was actually an organic chemist for years. She has her PhD. So I'm sorry, I should have said Dr. Rebecca Key. I meant to do that earlier. And she was an organic chemist, did that for a long time, worked in a lab, all that stuff. And then around the COVID times, I think, transitioned to being a developer, which I think a lot of our career changer people did that during that time, sort of a tumultuous time for everybody. And it was really good talking to Rebecca.
Yeah, it was really cool to talk about that transition and then also bringing her hobbies into things. She talked a lot about her experience with her ham radio, which I thought was really cool. And I really love getting to know like all of the sides of the people who come to the podcast. So I think that we got to explore a lot of different aspects of what it is to be a person in tech.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we start every episode of the podcast like we start every virtual coffee. We say our names, where we're from, what we do, and a random check-in question. We hope you enjoy this episode. Today's random check-in question is, what's one fun fact that you know? So one fun fact that I know is that possums have 13 nipples and they go in a circle with the 13th one in the middle.
That can't be real.
It is. I looked it up. And this is like a side note. I was at a conference once and they were giving out drink tickets and they were like, tell us a fun fact. And I told them that fun fact. And they were like, well, we meant about yourself, but that will work too. Like, cool.
Yeah. You just broke my brain.
I that's mean, like how the can kind you of follow that?
A child would draw. Hey, do you want to do the rest of the intro or are you just like your intro? Dang it.
I just got really excited about the question. Screwed this all up. My name is Becca. I am a technical community builder from a small town in Ohio. And there's also an animal that poops in squares, but I can't remember which one it is. Who knows?
That one I knew. It's a wombat, right?
Yes, wombat. I know that fun
one.
Fact
I knew.
Too.
I knew that one. That is a talent I've always been jealous of. You know, like that seems like a cool ability.
Do you know why they poop in squares?
I don't know for sure. My guess is something about rolling down hills, but I don't actually know.
Yeah, it's to mark territory, so it wouldn't roll down hills. They needed to have square poop, so they made it happen.
Nature is a miracle. Okay, hi, I'm Dan. Cleveland, Ohio, computery things. Let's see. Fun fact.
How are you going to get on me for my intro and you say computery things?
Okay, well, I said something, you know. There are, let's see, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, something else. All are related. And, oh, Brussels sprouts. And come from the same plant, and they're all human made. So that this one plant, humans took this plant and then selected for, you know, flowers and made cauliflower and selected for something else. I don't really know all the genetics, but like all of those plants don't come from nature. They come from human, plant. I don't know what you call it, gene manipulation, but like not in a chemistry lab. I don't know
why
what you call it.
Why did they choose all the bitter things and not like chocolate?
Well, I think the plant was bitter. I don't think they could.
Yeah, but why would you say, like, I'm going to take this bitter plant and make more bitter plants out of it? Like,
Well, why some people like bitter plants.
I mean, I also enjoy eating all of those things. But
I do too, right? But they're different. Like the, you know, like you can, you know, broccoli and cauliflower, that makes those like kind of look similar, except for the color. But like the, kale and I don't know if asparagus is in there.
Doesn't it come from the mustard seed?
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, it comes from some kind of seed because it's a plant. I don't remember what the... I should work on this fun fact so that I can actually say it, you know, for drink tickets, apparently. But that's the first fun fact that popped into my brain. So I'm going with that.
My name is Rebecca. I am a software engineer based out of Atlanta, Georgia. And a fun fact, one of the first ones that's coming to my mind is from an old school email chain. And I remember it's apparently impossible to lick your elbow.
Like nobody can do it.
My kids have tried, yeah.
And then according to the email chain of further down, it's like a certain number of people are going to try to lick their elbow after reading this. But I don't know if that myth has been debunked or not, but apparently it's tough or too impossible to do.
Yeah.
Get back to us.
It makes me want to try. Anytime someone says... Don't do it. You can't do that thing. Then I am usually going to try it. But in the circumstance,
Give it a shot.
I'm not going to try it in front of people. After we're done recording, I will try to lick my elbow.
Oh, fine. I wonder if there's like the people that can do the like crazy, you know, I don't know what you call it.
When their joints
are
all
be super bendy and stuff, you know? I wonder if there's something like that, you know? Or... There was, who was it? In Lethal Weapon, the guy, Riggs, I forget what the actor's name is, but he had a trick shoulder where he could pop it out, you know, like in, the, like he used it to get out of, you know, bad situations. But I wonder if he could pop it out and then just like turn his arm around. All right. If you have a trick shoulder, I want to hear from you. Let us know.
That's right. Send us some messages. podcast@virtualcoffee.io, right? We have that email address.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Send us all your feedback and fun stories. We're here for them. And speaking of fun stories, we have Rebecca Key here with us today. And we are very thankful. So thank you for being here. We're very excited to hear your story today.
Thank you again for having me. So as I mentioned before, I'm a software engineer. I come to tech after many years in being in science, specifically organic chemistry. I served in many roles over the years in research labs, being a laboratory technician all the way up to a research director in the pet care industry. And from there, like being an R&D director, that was in the height of the pandemic. So, you know, with the world shut down, everyone kind of, or some people, you know, paused. It's like, okay, you know, where am I at? Where am I going? Where do I want to go? And I had made solid contributions in my role. And what I wanted to do was be able to use my problem-solving skill set to be able to make a broader impact. And when I say broader impact, with software engineering, namely front-end development, which I spend most of my time doing, you have a pretty quick feedback loop on your work. Like in science, it can be an order of years from an idea from inception to completion to any sort of publication. And within that, your lab experiments can, you know, last from days to weeks. Again, where I hit refresh on a UI and I immediately, again, know where I'm going. And a wrong answer is at least an answer to get me back on the right track. And I can do that quickly, hopefully not taking a matter of days, years, et cetera. You got to get help long before that comes along. So that's what brought me to the field. I started working with a fitness-based web app that I started, Race Prep Fit. I'm hoping to get that eventually as a subscription service. The premise of it is having users customize their training program to meet goals for an event of their choice. I've also, beyond that, have done some independent contract work, most recently with Dan. I'm building UI elements in React. And it was a really neat experience where, you know, I'm a React developer more than anything else in tech, but I was able to learn more frameworks in React versus just the Create React app where I started. So it was, you know, neat being able to use Storybook, you know, getting familiar with Remix, and even dabbling a little bit in TypeScript, which I'd been wanting to do. And that gave me a reason to work on that. Done some other freelance work where I'm, you know, building static websites with companies, building a landing page, getting a form ready for people to subscribe to the company's email list. I've actually most recently started diving into content creation, reviving my blog for Ham Radio Adventures, RF Quest. Alongside that, I'm editing a video of where I built a 40-meter antenna in my backyard, hoping to get that on YouTube here in the next few days. So, you know, definitely keeping myself busy with things like that. And also with working with the ham radio, I'm able to keep my speaking and writing skills up to snuff, because unfortunately that is a very perishable skill set. And it's so important, no matter what field you go into, to be able to communicate, whether it's, you know, speaking or writing. And then also with radio, I'm able to do different contesting. Parks on the Air is something that we've been doing more recently, where it gets us out of the house. We set up radios at different, you know, state parks, wildlife management areas, public fishing areas. And if you can get more than 10 contacts on radio, you've activated the park. Also within some of these state parks, you've got, you know, mountain biking trails on some of them. There's hiking trails. You can go paddle boat. So it really, you know, encourages us to get out of the house. You know, with remote work is great, but you do have to make an effort to, you know, separate yourself so you can recharge, and then, you know, be the best you can be. Even with the exercising I do, I'm running in the neighborhood. I got a power rack in my living room, so I'll weightlift in my living room. I knit and crochet in my living room. So this is a really, you know, great way to get out of the neighborhood and, you know, talk to people through technology. It may not be coding, but it's definitely hitting that science and technology checkmark that's been a consistent in my life.
That I really love that. Cool. Yeah, I love it too. Sorry, Becca. I think we're both excited about it, though. It's such a cool idea. I have like so many questions about the ham radio stuff. So the program, what is the program called with the parks?
It's called Parks on the Air, or
Parks
PODA.
On the Air.
There's also nice. SODA, Summits on the Air, where you can, you know, hike or mountain bike up a mountain that's a designated summit for the program. There's a lot of them in North Georgia that's relatively locally. For that one, you have to make 4 contacts to activate the summit. So that was a little different. There's a big prize on that one. I think it's 100 contacts in a year. Ham radio sodium enthusiast, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the Mountain Goat Award. And that was a really big one to get. We met someone not that long ago that did it on 2 meters, which is more of a local line of sight band. So that was definitely a challenge added to that as well.
Nice. So you built a big antenna in your yard. Is it the same? Are you using the same radio like at home and when you're traveling, or do you have like, is there a smaller one, or, you know, when you're...
Yeah, so this particular one, this antenna is actually just a long, about 61 feet of wire for this particular one. This one was actually made in mind to take with us for portable ops.
Oh, wow. The one in your backyard?
There are some in the backyard for the home unit that.
Oh, okay, yeah, there's a home unit. That's what I was like. Yeah. So how heavy is the one where you are taking it to parks and, you know, mountains and stuff?
So the one we take is probably just a couple of pounds. I mean, you've got to take you know, the batteries as well with it. Always have to make sure to charge those beforehand so you can actually use the said radio. And the antenna's pretty lightweight. Really easy to work with. The brand that we built this antenna with, it's called Soda Beams. They actually is a company that kind of has the soda contesting in mind for people to just be able to easily transport it.
That's so cool. It reminds me I guess Pokemon Go now. There was a game called Ingress before that, you know, the people who made Pokemon Go made Ingress first, you know, and then they basically kind of rebranded it. But the thing that I loved the most about it was that same thing, right? Where there's like, there are goals and stuff, but it, you have to travel around, like it, not maybe as, I mean, you can choose how much you go, you know, but you get rewarded for going new places and, you know, exploring new places and stuff like that. It's really neat. I love those combinations of, you know, technology and forcing you to get away from just sitting at your computer or your phone or whatever, you know, because lots of times when you think of that kind of stuff, for me at least, I end up just sitting on my computer, you know, doing neat stuff, but like still just sitting here, you know. So I love that. I love anything that helps you, you know, rewards you for getting out into the world.
For sure. Even locally, it's nice to have a good little change of scenery when you need it. And some of these state parks are within about 30 minutes from where we live. So that's not too bad of a drive.
Nice.
I think it's interesting because you've talked a lot about how we touch on technology in our lives outside of the coding, but how impactful that it can still be, how it can still create connections for us, and how you're kind of utilizing your interest to be able to do that. And so you talked a little bit about this app that you're creating, that you want it to move into a subscription service, which sounds like it's filling that need as well. So did that get started as a project personally for you or to help you learn? And, you know, how has that developed throughout your skill set development as well?
Well, kind of a little bit of everything. It was kind of my first foray into learning React. I've been in probably a consistent runner, probably for within the last 10 years, I've been running on and off since I was 14. It's something that it is a great form of exercise because it's readily available and easy to do. The best forms of exercise are ones you can do. And I figured it would keep me motivated to keep running. It would, you know, get me going in React, but also kind of think of a way of, okay, contributions can you make that aren't already out there? And that's kind of like in chemistry as well. You're doing research on something that's entirely new, or you're finding a new twist on something that's already there, or you're building on, you know, something else, just showing something new. And, you know, what I was hoping for to show something new with this is to be able to have something where a user can customize a training plan, as opposed to something where it's like, okay, I ran 3 miles today, which that's great that those things do have their purpose. But, you know, someone wants a little bit more than just, you know, logging miles. This is a way to say, okay, I want to train in this manner. This run's going to be a tempo run. This run's going to be at pace, or you just kind of log where you run at intervals and things like that. If you're doing speed work, for example, it kind of gives, kind of opens some doors to having a little more data. And, you know, as a somebody who spent my career handling data, telling stories, that's also kind of something that appealed to working on or more of a fitness-based app.
I think that's really great. I had used like a handful of years ago, Couch to 5K or whatever it was. And it's pretty straightforward, right? Like everybody has the same workouts, I think, every day. And then I found when I started getting back into running about a year ago that I wanted to improve, but I didn't really know how to, because there's, at least I couldn't really find anything out there. So that idea of like what you're talking about, that kind of customization, different kinds of running workouts or whatever, is really appealing, because I pretty much know nothing about running. Oh, I can't run now because I tore the meniscus in my knee. But one day when I get back there, that idea of improving my speed is something that I'd like to focus on. And finding the application of data to do that is a really interesting concept, I think.
Sure. It's going well, and I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, where it goes, where it takes me, and all of that.
It sounds like you're doing a lot of different things, right? You've got a lot of hobbies and activities, and you're doing contract work and you're doing this. How do you balance or not balance all of the different things that you're working on?
So I have to prioritize, you know, basically with deadlines. Some things are a little more pressing need to be done a little faster. So those things I do, you know, prioritize first. There's some things, depending on what needs to be done with it, I take more time to dedicate to that. But what I try to do big picture, you know, I have my written list of things I do need to do, and, you know, try to, you know, prioritize the stuff that needs to be done sooner, that needs more time, take, you know, take those first. And if there's something that can wait, you know, that kind of gets put to the bottom of the list. So, you know, try to big picture, you know, try to multitask, but there, if there's something that, you know, needs my attention a little more, you know, briefly, you know, put some other things aside, get the priority done. And what I also do, and I did this in science as well, I'm a note taker. I'm hardcore pen and paper. But if I get to the end of something or I'm at a good stopping point, I will make notes of what I need to do next when I come back to it. Because sometimes you get taken away from something longer than you want to. And having that cue of what you've done and what you need to get back to is a way where I can ideally, you know, minimize time just scrambling, trying to figure out what I did going behind myself. So that's kind of a tool that I've had for many years that I carry with me. It serves me pretty well in tech as far as, you know, getting caught back up to speed on something that I haven't touched maybe in a bit.
I think that's such a great idea. I struggle with the problem that you have solved. And for me, lots of times it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to leave these 14 tabs open, and, you know, hopefully they're still open when I come back to them. I can decode what I was thinking, you know, something like that. It doesn't work that well. I mean, it sometimes works, it sometimes not. And I think, you know, when you're independent, like you are, you don't have a manager like telling you all the different things and stuff, and that sort of ability to prioritize and quickly change context, you know, it's such a valuable skill. And I feel like you've figured a lot of that stuff out. It's really cool to hear. I'm also very jealous all the time of people who can take notes and, you know, do take good notes and useful notes. I never learned that skill. You know, I struggled with it in school and just didn't even try after school. But the times that I've taken notes, I'm like, man, this is awesome. I should do this all the time. And then I don't.
But it's nice with the to-do list. I have kind of that visual cue of kind of where to start, where I need to look and go. And I also use org mode with Emacs to kind of keep another list of some things like what progress I'm making, where I'm at on it. It gives you, you know, to-do and progress and review done. So I use that as well to accompany. But yeah, even if I'm in a meeting with someone, I think one of my first meetings with you, Dan, on the work we did, I'm like, I'm a note taker. If I'm looking down and doing this, I'm not ignoring you. I'm just taking notes because I've, you know, got to have my pen and paper nearby. I don't know if that comes with just, you know, keeping laboratory notebooks all those years. I mean, even my knitting and crocheting, I've got a lab notebook quote of the work I do with it. So,
that's awesome.
I love that. And I met with an owner of a company a couple of years ago, and I really appreciated when he said to me, if I'm looking down, it's because I'm taking notes, right? Because I think sometimes that can be off-putting, and I appreciate that you mentioned that too. Like, if I'm not looking, and I try and do that as well, because I'm a big note taker, and I don't know where I'm going with this train of thought, other than note-taking is one of those things that we actually talk about a lot at Virtual Coffee, and getting started in note-taking and different tools for note-taking. And it can be a little bit over, like, sounds straightforward, right? You take notes. But it's not, like, it's complex for a lot of people. And then the tools over there out there can be really overwhelming. I find myself mostly pen and paper, but I use Obsidian very lightly just because I mostly use it for Markdown to be able to do that. Have you gone on like a note taking journey where you've tried some of these other tools? I tried Notion like a handful of times, and every time I'm just super overwhelmed. I can't handle it.
So I've kept up with org mode a little bit. There's a lot org mode can do. It's definitely more of an Emacs-based tool. That one, I just kind of keep trying some general notes, and also kind of a backup in case, you know, something happens to my spiral notebook, or I can't find the information readily, so I have it electronically so I can kind of grasp where I'm at with it and find it. I've worked with Notion a little bit. I don't dislike it, but I didn't see where it really helped me specifically. So I don't use it very often. It's not a knock on the tool. It's just something that's not really working for me right now. But what helps me with taking notes, and sometimes I'll go back, sometimes I don't know necessarily need the detail, but it gives me, if when I need it, space and time. Because if I have space and time, I can usually find what I'm looking for. I tell people one of my superpowers is finding needles in haystacks. And that helps me too. That is, especially if you can give me a timeline on that. Also as well, you know, just writing the notes sometimes helps me better retain the information. So it helps me slow down, absorb what I need to absorb, and kind of have that reference as well. And you know, kind of circling back to ham radio, I actually, you might see some on my Twitter, I have this clipboard where I'm writing down my contacts. I've had that clipboard since I was 10 years old. I got it for my birthday. It has seen, you know, QSOs for ham radio. It's seen my weekly spelling list. It's seen my PhD dissertation notes. It's seen a lot. But it's, you know, it's something that it's just nice to write it down. And I've learned when I'm taking quick notes, like with my radio contacts, I have to get those logged in. You have to log them into their app for it to count. I've got to do that pretty soon because you can get a backlog, or it's like, I don't remember the details of this particular QSO. So I need to just go log it, you know, get it where it needs to go. So I get the important details where they need to be. Of course, you know, if I'm writing fast, the longer time goes, the less I'm able to read my own handwriting. I'm left-handed. I got that scrawl going on. but yeah, it's like, I am a shameless note taker. And just any, like we've talked, yeah, virtual coffee. It's like, okay, I just need some college rule paper. I need an extra fine point on it because being a lefty, you get all this ink down your hands, makes such a mess. When I would TA in grad school, when I was on the whiteboard, even whiteboard present day, I'm always checking myself to make sure I don't have all the residue on my hand, but lefty problems.
I always wanted to be left-handed. There's a fun fact about me.
Blessing and a curse.
What? Yeah. I mean, you could train yourself to be left-handed. Just do
it. I tried to for a while when I was a kid. just don't know that I have that kind of time or desire anymore. And then I feel like it's kind of cheating. Like, oh, I'm not really left-handed. I just forced myself to be able to be.
Yeah, I think, I mean, way. Honestly, being ambidextrous would be the coolest. I think that'd be really cool. Be able to, you know, do everything equally with both hands. That's
fun fact, actually. Left-handed people have a greater tendency to be ambidextrous.
Oh, interesting.
Is that a social thing, or is that like a?
Well, in a right-handed world, it's like we have to adapt. So I learned to play guitar back in college. And, you know, I was brought up to the teacher. I'm like, I'm left-handed. Do I need a left-handed guitar? And he presented that, you know, lefties can be more ambidextrous. And like, you know, that makes sense. He's like, you know, try to learn right-handed because you're really going to cut yourself off if you, you know, have to guitar left-handed. But guitar left hand is what controls the neck. So it actually worked out for me. I don't play a lot. I can't remember the last time I played, but, you know, taking kind of that into consideration, I was able to do that right-handed. I sometimes have to cut right-handed because the scissors don't like me, but once I get a pair of scissors, it works. They're mine.
Bring them back. The scissors was a big, so my younger son is left-handed, and that was like, and none of my family is, you know, like, and the scissors, the fact that right-handed scissors, there's actually right-handed and left-handed scissors, and they're built differently. Like that was a mind-blowing thing. I had no idea about that. Like I thought it was just like, oh, the shape of the holes, you know, the shape that, you know, it's just like a comfort thing. It was actually like the way that the cutting edges are cut is opposite on left-handed scissors. And it's something about the way that, you know, because the way you hold it, your thumb is moving the scissors, you know, so that blade is the one that's moving. And so when you do it the opposite side, it doesn't cut that well if you have right-handed scissors and you're using your left hand. And I had no idea about that. It's like a mind blowing thing. So
those little scissors in school, those little basic scissors, those are a nightmare for productivity.
Oh, that's why we, that's exactly why we did that, because we have those safety scissors. And so you can buy left-handed safety scissors and they work, you know what I mean? And so we did that and it made a difference, but I had no idea. Yeah. Learning new things. I feel like Sam said, he's four and he gets confused sometimes because his, Bennett's right-handed, his older brother that he, follows around and does all this stuff. And so he goes back and forth. His mind is left-handed, you know what I mean? But he's like, he just gets all mixed up. I'm like, wait, why are you using your right hand? I'm like, you can do whatever you want, but like, I think it might be easier for you if you use your left. He's like, oh yeah, I forgot. So I don't know.
It's always I kept to remind myself, like, am I left-handed when I do this or am I right-handed when I do this? Because I played, when I played softball many years ago, I played right-handed because I was, I could throw with, I throw better with my left and I throw left dominantly to this day, but I couldn't catch because you have to, your gloves on your right hand playing softball, and I couldn't catch as well with my right hand. So I had to switch that up because it's like, okay, I'm going to be more efficient if I can catch left-handed and, get by with my, right-handed arm. So yeah, it's definitely, you go through life figuring it out. and any lefty will can empathize with backing out of a parking space the wrong way. And there, get the wrong end of the door, with the bar, you push on the wrong side.
Oh. I do that all the time. I'm not sure what's wrong with me. What's my brain still wanting to be left-handed? Yeah, it's interesting. Awesome. I was talking to somebody recently about this. It might have been James Quick. And I wonder, there are some people that they will write left-handed or write right-handed, but they'll do things like play golf or play sports left-handed. And so then I wonder, how do you, what makes you right-handed or left-handed? Is it just the hand that you write with and that's what you choose? Because if you use your left hand dominantly in other things, then what are you, just ambidextrous? Is that what you say? I don't know.
So for me, I would tell people I am pretty decently left-handed because some people are a little more dominant on the left hand than others. So I have a cousin who's left-handed. She played basketball right-handed. I played basketball left because I was much better left-handed than right. Although you had to, if you're a short 5'3" person like myself playing, you got to play point guard, handle the ball. But I was more dominant on the left-hand side. With softball, again, I was just able to be more functional playing right-handed, so I could throw and catch. Whereas having to catch with my right hand, it'd been more of a learning curve at the time.
Yeah. So you could teach yourself to do anything with either hand if both hands work the same. But left-handedness or right-handed, whatever, it's genetic. Like, it is a genetic thing, but there's a lot of social, things. There used to be superstitions about left-handed people, right? And so that got corrected. And so the writing is probably they just were taught to write right-handed before anybody realized that they're left-handed, or, because it's kind of hard when you have little kids, not really paying attention to what they're doing or whatever. And so if they start writing and you say, use your right hand, before you realize that they're left-handed, then that's probably how that happens. You're making a lot of faces, Becca.
I'm going down a rabbit hole of what makes what happens in your brain if you're left-handed. And it's wild. Let's see.
We're in our right mind.
Handedness. Right brain. Is associated with functional lateralization of cerebral dominance. I just have never
totally. I mean, I was going to say that
have less lateralized brains.
What?
This is really, I don't know. I never really thought of the neurology of left-handedness until right now, and now this is going to be something I'm stuck on. Wow, there's studies that are done on identical twins with different handedness.
Yes, that is actually, I had identical twin friends in high school. They're a lot of times they're mirror images of each other. So their parts are mirror images. One's usually right-handed, one's usually left-handed, or maybe a little more on the ambidextrous side. But that's actually very common with identical twins, at least.
Yep.
Or one's right-handed, one's left.
Yeah, I have good friends that are in the same situation. I had forgotten about that till just now, but yeah, it's that
my
honestly
mind
has
is
to be
blown.
Frustrating. You have as a parent, you have twins, and then you have to buy different sets of everything all at once. Different baseball.
All right. Well, I'm gonna provide some links in the show notes for anybody else who is interested in the brains of left-handers.
This was an interesting. We always have these strange offshoots in the podcast.
All about the ink mess on my hand. This is something that I've always been cognizant of because it makes such a mess. And we talk about note taking. I'm a believer in note taking. This is how I do it.
I love it though. I mean, this is a lot of the discussion about who people are, right? And I don't know. I don't have these conversations all the time. I've never had this conversation about left-handedness. So it's fun to kind of think about okay, who are the people who are in tech? And this is maybe more fun than talking, more fun for me than comparing technologies. I want to circle back just for a second, because you have a PhD.
I do.
We didn't really talk about that much. So your PhD is in chemistry, right?
Yes, I'm specifically organic chemistry. I went down the chemistry path in college. I was a biology major at first. I changed my major to chemistry. And when people ask, it's like, well, okay, why are you a chemistry major? Why did you change? I took organic chemistry and I accidentally liked it. So, you get these horror stories about organic chemistry is so hard, it's soul sucking, it's torture. And, I really started enjoying it in spite of kind of a funny story about a lab write-up I did many years ago. I remember going to office hours and getting frustrated. And I finally got the answer. And then I remember telling my then professor, I'm never going to work in a lab. Famous last word, because I spent years in research in labs. And funny enough, that professor was actually my contact on my first academic research job. So I'm sure he laughed a lot about my then 19-year-old self proclaiming, that's never going to happen. Well,
that's funny. My freshman year of college, I wanted to be a math major. And so I wanted to take Calc 2, but they didn't offer it. Instead, they offered an English class, which I took. And then I ended up being an English major and taught English for 10 years after that. So it's funny, the way that things happen that you don't expect. Yeah. And now I'm in tech. So
sure. And even when I was a lab tech, when I was applying to graduate schools, because you can learn a lot as a lab tech, but you also hit glass ceilings. So I wanted to do more work where I could do independent work. I could own my own projects, write papers, have a lot more options than you could as a lab tech. And so in spite of getting into the life sciences program at the medical college I was doing research on, I'm like, organic chemistry was where it was at for me. I need to go down that path. So I went to Georgia Tech. And my first half of my PhD was building catalysts to purify compounds that could be active pharmaceutical ingredients, another type of API. And then I did my second half of my PhD in total synthesis, where the compounds I was targeting had activity against malaria.
Wow.
So it was really some neat research there. And then once I finished at Georgia Tech, I went to UT Knoxville, University of Tennessee, where I was able to, in my postdocs, take my organic synthesis skill set, build catalysts to convert lignin into valuable fuels and chemicals, where that was the end goal with the catalyst, get these valuable fuels and chemicals to have an alternative for non-renewable resources, should they become depleted. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the work with my PhD research as well as my postdoc.
That's fascinating. And so you spent a lot of time, it sounds like, doing all of this stuff and definitely a lot of schooling. And that's a huge investment. And then you decided to move into tech. Was there any part of you when you were making that decision that was sad leaving that behind? Or, I can't imagine it was an easy decision to move over, but maybe that's a part of the story we don't know yet.
Well, some of it too, you know, it was, we're in the height of the pandemic, and, you know, even though at my time my work was on site, because in chemistry, you can't really, you know, unless you're safely set up to have the fume hood and do this stuff at home, you don't do that stuff at home. And I was at the point of like, okay, well, what is normal going to look like when the world opens up again? And I wanted to have those options of being able to use that same problem solving skill set to be able to do a role where I could do anywhere. So some of it was the sign of the times. It was a lot of it. And again, you know, having that flexibility of, you know, doing your work from anywhere, provided you do it well, you know, that time you don't commute could be time, you know, you find a mountain bike trail and, you know, you get a ride in, because those things were important too. So I do, you know, look back and can be, you know, proud of the work I've done, the contributions I've made to the field. But, you know, I've had a good time in tech, a great time, you know, troubleshooting. Like, I'll go through, you know, some of my apps and, you know, kind of take the same approach as I did in science. It's like, okay, I got to troubleshoot. I got to take one variable at a time. In tech, of course, you know, I'll play user on my UI and going back to taking notes. It's like, okay, I'm going to do engage in an action. I'm going to write down what happens and then have that record of, you know, where maybe something went south. It's like, okay, I'm going to target this here, start here, because I know this isn't doing what I want it to do. And then, you know, push it forward. And it's not, you know, being in a lab, but, you know, being able to troubleshoot still and be able to do it on that rapid timescale is something that I really enjoy. And I'm glad I, you know, took that step, you know, and it is a risk in a way, because it is different than, you know, setting up your experiments. But, you know, to be able to still troubleshoot and solve problems and, you know, still even collaborate. So it's like, you know, in research, you know, with collaborations, you know, plant scientists, for example, instead of me learning how to be a plant scientist, I go talk to a plant scientist. We talk about some problems that we may need to solve for the project. And they've got the infrastructure to set up those experiments, whereas I would have a lab accessible where we had, you know, stuff setting up to do synthetic organic chemistry. It's less time for me to set up what I need to set up. I have the know-how and the instruments and the other setup to get those things done. And even in software, in Virtual Coffee even specifically, I have an idea of like, okay, I don't do Ruby on Rails. I know Meg does. I know people who do Vue, TypeScript, Dan being one of those people, you know, content creation, Becca, you do this every day. You know who you can reach out to that can give you insight on things that you need to know, but you don't need to spend day-to-day doing. So I'm still getting all those goodies that I got, you know, working in a research lab.
I think that's such a great mindset. And I think there are a lot of people out there that think that you have to do it all. And you definitely don't. It's knowing who you can talk to about doing those things and utilizing them when you need to, that really makes you strong at what you do. That's really great.
Yeah, especially as an independent developer, you know, it's such a strong and important skill to have. And your clients, I think, would appreciate it too, you know, and not have like the exact same thing, right? Like, oh no, I have to do this thing that I know nothing about. Do I want the client to pay me for like 2 weeks to learn a new thing, or, you know, an hour of somebody else's time that already knows it, right? The same thing. It's so cool.
So I do have just two more questions for you. And the first one is, you've got this really great journey that you've gone on. You've learned all of these things. What is one word to describe your career journey?
Let's say dynamic, hands down. It constantly changed, whether I was seeking those changes or they, you know, presented themselves. And it's like I was keeping an open mind, like, okay, this is the better fit for me right now. And I'll use it again. You know, I accidentally liked organic chemistry. I went down that path in science. And then when I switched over to tech, I thought that data science was going to be my jam. And, you know, I don't close the doors on anything, but, you know, having that skill set in science to be able to visually, tell stories with data, that's me. That's written about me. But, I ended up getting really acquainted with the front end and, being a visual learner, that actually looking back makes a lot of sense. And I've been, more front end heavy, more React heavy that way. And then I've also learned a little bit more on the back end, circling back after a little bit from the initial Python and R with data science. So yeah, it's, I'd say dynamic. It's constantly changing. It's going to change from this point forward. And keeping an open mind has always, been beneficial, because you just never know what you might be a good fit for at a given time and space.
That's exactly what I was going to say. What a strength that you have in that openness to consider other things that might not seem like the natural path, because that can be really hard to do. And my last question for you is, what is one word that describes you?
I'm going to go with the word consistent. So I would say I am a what you see is what you get kind of person, personality-wise. I would have told you that years ago. And then in spite of, our learning experiences, the things, that we grow from, I would say the Rebecca you're talking to now was the same Rebecca you would have met in high school, more or less. And then as far as staying consistent on, goals or projects that matter to me, from anywhere of, videotaping myself for 3 months doing cheers and jumps and handsprings so I could finally make my squad success. I did that 3 months straight to, see myself, to train and see what I needed to do, to, present day, where I've been consistently working on coding. And, even though you may not see this big, significant change in a day, being consistent has consistently served me well. So I definitely say I'm consistent. If I can keep at something, sometimes it happens, rapidly. Sometimes you wish it would happen faster, but that consistency has always been something that has served me well.
This is great. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today and talking through all of this, your interesting journey, and giving us, I think, a lot of insight into what you're doing. And your approach to me is something that I'm going to go back and reflect on, because I think that there are so many strengths that you have there and ways that I would like to grow in my own journey. So I really appreciate you sharing.
Absolutely. And thank you both again for having me. This was a fun conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Rebecca. All right. We will talk to you soon.
All right. I'll see you then.
Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. This episode was produced by Dan Ott and Becca Harrott-Weigel. If you have questions or comments, you can hit us up on Twitter at virtualcoffee.io or email us at podcast@virtualcoffee.io. You can find the show notes, sign up for the newsletter, check out any of our other resources on our website, virtualcoffee.io. If you're interested in sponsoring Virtual Coffee, you can find out more information on our website at virtualcoffee.io/sponsorship. Please subscribe to our podcast and be sure to leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.